Kyle Fansler from World Soccer Talk, and this episode of the World Soccer Talk podcast is presented by Sling. Now, even though the European club calendar is over, Sling is still a very useful tool for American soccer fans, and that includes the upcoming Euro 2024 qualifiers. Again, those are available via Sling. Destination European Nights is Paramount Plus's latest documentary that features Spanish journalist Guillaume Balague traveling across Europe, getting the full picture of what soccer means to every single country in Europe. And that includes countries such as Israel, Finland, Georgia, you name it, including those cathedrals of the sport. And today I have the real privilege of talking to journalist Guillaume Balague on that documentary. Guillaume, you are an icon when it comes to journalists in soccer, and I got to say it's a real privilege for me to be talking to you. And just my first question is about this documentary. You're well known, especially in the United States, for your Champions League coverage, and you're always pitch side at these major stadiums, but the documentary goes well beyond just those major clubs, if you will. You're traveling to, already mentioned, the likes of Scotland, Israel, Finland, Kvitsa Kvaratskhelia's Georgia. Tell me about what it's like to travel to all those countries and really capture the culture and the entire energy of the sport.
Hi, Kyle, and thank you for your kind words. Let me just explain first that this is the continuation of an idea that popped up in the mind of the genius that we got as executive producer, Pete Radovich, about 3 years ago, when I started doing that for what you're describing on the games pitch side. I think the first one was the first game post-pandemic in Europe, which was the Barcelona-Napoli. And I remember asking my agent, what do I wear? What do they want? So zero knowledge about what was being done because all of it was very, very new. And very soon after that, because there was still a lot of limitations of how you could travel and no fans in the stadiums and stuff like that, a unique moment in history, Pete Radovich said, do you know what? We'll put two cameras on you and a sound man and sometimes a drone. And every time you go somewhere, we'll do something. Yeah, I mean, let's do that. And what came out was the first documentary, which was, if you look at it now, Destination Porto, to see empty airports, empty train stations, empty roads, people with masks and the amount of stuff that we had to go through. It was a great idea to do at the time as a chronicle of that moment. And then I thought, right, well, you know, I've done my documentary, happy. No, we're doing another one, which was last year, of course, Destination Paris. And yes, as you described it in this third one, we're doing exactly the same thing, which is wherever I go, I land, got a couple of days because you don't use much more time than that. And there is a producer, there's a cameraman or two, sound man, as I said, sometimes a drone, and go. Obviously, there's a lot of preparation behind what we want to do, as you describe, what we want to explore. It's not about the game. But yes, how the game, football, kind of affects the life of people and how there are so many that dedicate their time, not necessarily in exchange for money, to football and why and how football can be helpful sometimes, like we saw in Israel, where, you know, we went to see a team, Maccabi Rein Haifa, which is a mixture of Jewish and Arabs and Christians playing together as an example of what, you know, what football can do and society when they get their heads together. So that's the idea behind all of these documentaries and certainly the one that we're doing now.
How does the one now compare to those ones in the past? I mean, obviously it's going to be different because, for example, in Destination Porto, you already mentioned it, the world was more or less shut down. But how does, just in general, how does Destination European Nights compare to the editions that regarded the previous couple of Champions League seasons?
I am European, and as such, my idea of what your role is as a journalist or as an author, write books as well, is to disappear. That really is the target, that you know the story. But in America, you do things a little bit different. So I think we found now a common ground in which I don't want to be the story at all, but Pete Radovich has suggested that maybe I should just get more involved. So I do a bit of a catwalk in Milan, with a model next to me. I serve beers in Munich. I play petanque in Paris. So there's a bit of an involvement more in line with how you picture your journalist or those that head documentaries like this. So there's more of that. And then every story is different, of course. The threat is football. The threat is the Champions League. But for instance, we're going to go to Istanbul for a few days. And the idea, it won't be so much about, you know, Haaland or Pep Guardiola. There'll be some of that, of course, because hopefully we'll be meeting them in the media day on next week, next Tuesday. But it's about Istanbul, who had the possibility of hosting the Champions League final before and couldn't, and who are going right now through major, major changes, social and political, which all that gets reflected as well somewhere, somehow, in football. Now, don't ask me more about it, because we're trying to find out what that link is, or what is the possible links that we want to explore. And then, because there is that as well, people think a documentary is like years of preparation. But I think this makes this one a bit special and different and sharp is that we think of it a week before going, and then we have to put it all together. And by the way, if we get in that place and we haven't got the person, or the person is not the right one, having spoken to him, let's find somebody else. And that really is exciting and part of what we're doing.
I'd imagine it's pretty incredible to travel around all these countries and serve beer in Munich and go on a model walk in Milan. But I want to ask you, as a journalist and just as a person, are there any inherent challenges that you think you face because you are doing all these travels and going to different countries? And it's hard for me to say as an American, because Europeans, they are so kind of connected in their own different cultures. But for you, are there any challenges that really pop up and maybe make your life a little more challenging than, say, the average journalist?
There are, but I wouldn't call it challenges, and I'll tell you what they are. It's just part of my job. I don't think of it like, God, another plane, another hotel, another city, or another bunch of people that I don't know if I'm going to like producers. And it's not like that. It's like, who's my next director, or who is going to be the cameraman? Oh, I know him. Oh, I know her. And the same with the cities. And because I've got my memory is zero, is minus 10. I'm like a fish. It's like, oh, Munich, isn't it great? Oh, look, the colors. Oh, look, the buildings. I've been there 10 times. I should know everything about Munich. I forget. So for me, it's like a new discovery every time. And then, yes, there are flights that you have to get at like 6 o'clock in the morning. And obviously you go to bed normally at whatever, midnight, and have to get up 3 hours later and go. Because from the moment you land, you're on the go. People are waiting for you, and you have to be in character. You have to be the guy that is happy to meet everyone, and is my nature anyway, but has got a sharp idea of what you're looking for, or what we need to get from the other person, and how to leave the person, how to make them comfortable. All that is challenging, if you like, but is very enjoyable. As long as, I don't know if people are going to find this interesting or not, but as long as I have a seat 1A, fast track, and priority, I'm the happiest man in the world. It doesn't matter if it's low cost flight or scheduled flight or whatever, because 1A means that you can be in and out of the plane in no time, and normally carry a cabin bag with me. It means also you can stretch your legs, and normally my deepest sleep tends to be on a plane. I come really refreshed from my trips. And fast track, you avoid a lot of, especially with a cabin bag that you have to open, and you've got your creams and whatever. Fast track allows you to do that all very quickly. And instead of being, you know, an hour queuing when you slept 3 hours, is not fun. But that's it. I mean, we get to always go to a restaurant. That's one of my, I didn't demand this, but somehow it's been introduced as part of the tradition. Find a restaurant with local food where local people will go and explore that side as well. And from there as well, there's been conversations that we've used for the documentary.
I want to tap into that memory that you said might not be the strongest, but all these restaurants, these different cities, different experiences that you've had. I want to press you, which one of these, and it doesn't have to be one from this edition of the Destination series, I'm curious if you have a favorite city or favorite country, maybe even like a favorite club within a city that you really have grown fond of over the years.
I love the food in Italy. I love the organization in Germany. I love the chaos, but also goodwill of the people in Spain. I think when you go further away from the heart of Western Europe, if you like, is when you get to see a world that that surprises you and that's not your usual. Moldova, or when we went even to Israel, which I've been different few times, but to actually find out, as I told you earlier, about how football is run there, I was really interesting how, and all the things come out of it, and that also what makes those trips interesting. It's not just the place; it's who you meet, and to meet the CEO of Maccabi Ren Haifa, for instance, and then having him on the phone every 2 days because he knows that I'm going to help him maybe get one or two players that that perhaps he didn't have access to. That also enriches the whole trip. I wouldn't have one particular place. I just love what I do, and I'm lucky to be able to do it. Meanwhile, or at the same time as I'm, you know, with the BBC doing radio shows or podcasts, or you doing my own podcast or preparing books, or so all that is. If the next question is how you organize yourself, don't ask it because I just don't know how you put it all together. Just basically a calendar that's full up every day, but. Because I love it, it keeps you going.
I think something that I find really interesting about you, Guillaume, is your relationship with athletes. And I'm going to harken back to last season's Champions League final. You were having a conversation with Karim Benzema, and you asked him about Micah Richards. And I mean, it's good quality content, especially for people watching from across the Atlantic Ocean, just being able to see, you know, a personal relationship with these people that we only see on TV. So I want to ask you, do you have a favorite soccer player that you have a friendship or relationship with? Or is it just kind of you have that colloquial ability with virtually everybody you talk to?
First of all, let me say that I find fascinating the approach that Pete Radovich has put into the whole coverage of the Champions League and how it allows you to be yourself. Go back to when I was mentioning, what do I wear? My agent said, oh, go with tie and white shirt and suit. And okay, I did that and felt so uncomfortable. And after that, I started using my own clothes, and it was like, yeah, be yourself. Oh, okay. I've been in Sky. I've been in the BBC. They don't always invite you to be yourself. But secondly, they create this atmosphere in which you're not working and you're relating to people as friends, if you are friends, or at least as people you can get more personal with. And that goes in because I've done it. That's part of my trick, if you like, in my life. I develop relationship with people in which you end up telling the world 20% of what you know. And they grow to like you, and you end up, I don't know, I've been presenting commercial events with Messi for many years. I've done the same with Cristiano Ronaldo and a few others. So you develop relationships. But actually, I've always, in front of camera, done something that's a bit more personal, including in the Flash Zone interviews, because I think it's good television, but not everybody has used it. And I tell you, CBS has definitely gone for it big time, which I like. And yes, I've been at the job for 30 years. Some of these guys that I'm talking to now, I don't know, Jack Grealish, for instance, in recent times, he's watched me on television when he was a kid. So I was in Sky, doing Sky Sports in the UK, doing Spanish football for many years. And he used to watch it and fell in love with the Spanish football through it and through the stories I would tell him. So you can see straight away, oh, hello. It's like, Jack, I'd never met you in my life. But if you sense that, then you go straight in, oh, are you okay? You know, are you going to sleep after the game? But that becomes part of the interview and you get a completely different angle. And why not? So the fact that he's allowed and the fact that, yes, that our relationships are there, it's something that we're using really well. And in terms of favorite, if I tell you a couple of names of people I'm very, 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 very close to, it may affect what people think, what I say of them. Because it has no relation, but you know what it's like. If you say I'm friends with, that's it. You know, whatever you say, it's like, oh, you've just been told to say. So right. I'll keep it quiet. But let's say that my phone book is quite a generous phone book in terms of numbers and people that are on it.
Well, Guillaume, on the topic of CBS's coverage, and I've talked to Pete Radovich before about the crew that he assembled for its Champions League coverage. I mean, it's awesome to watch, and strictly just from an entertainment perspective, there's not really a comparison, at least when it comes to American coverage of soccer. And you're working with Thierry Henry, Jamie Carragher, Micah Richards on a weekly basis almost when the Champions League is in full swing. Tell me about what it's like working with them and being able to have conversations with them, like I say, whenever the Champions League is on.
Add Kate Abdo there.
And Kate Abdo,
she's
exactly.
She's absolutely crucial for the atmosphere that she creates. She disappears, as I was saying earlier, she disappears. But she's been asked to be more herself and be a bigger part of the show, so she goes that way. But she's very sharp and intelligent, and she's got that little bit of insecurity that makes you good, because you keep at it and you don't think you never got there, even though she's presented Ballon d'Ors and FIFA awards and all kinds. But she's brilliant, you have to say. We've got a really close relationship. I love her to bits. And with the three guys that you mentioned, with Mike has been interesting, because we throw each other darts through the camera, and when we see each other, we just give a big hug. And but yes, there is this there's this conflict about fashion. He thinks he's fashionable. I think I am, and it goes on like that. The joke continues. With Jamie Carragher, I've known him for many, many years. He helped me with my first book, A Season on the Brink, when I explained that first season of Rafa Benitez at Liverpool when they won the Champions League. And since then, we've been in touch and done a lot of things together. There is a respect, mutual respect. That, by the way, goes also for Thierry Henry. I sense his respect. He obviously gets mine. But the fact that I can mix with them and they treat me like one of them, I'll never forget. That's a privilege. I am very, very lucky to be seen in good eyes by these guys. I haven't played the game. Yes, I've written books. I've been on television for 30 years. I do my job. But in football, you know what it's like. If it's a very small world that you not easily get access to or accepted by. And I sense that that is there. And that's there, again, this happens because of the top. And I have to mention Pete Radovich again, because if he doesn't create that energy, that sense, those vibes, it doesn't happen. They are good people anyway. The four of them are marvelous people. But they've been invited to be themselves and treat themselves with the respect that they are. And I'm just very thankful for it.
I want to take a step away from the Champions League and I went through a little bit of a curveball here. And correct me if I'm wrong, but I believe you are the chairman of non-league side Biggleswade United, which I believe is in the ninth tier in the English pyramid. First of all, tell me about that and how you came into that role. And second of all, what's the most rewarding part about being the chairman of Biggleswade United?
That you say it is such a wonderful thing to hear it say it with an American accent as well. Wonderful. I got my coaching badges, UFRB, and I thought I like to coach, but I never had the time because I was traveling every week. And around that time, I tried to buy a club in Spain with some other prominent figures of Spanish football. Didn't happen. And eventually got an email from the chairman of Biggleswade United at the time. This is October 2014, saying, we hear you talking about football. You think you know about football. Prove it. And, you know, you get a lot of emails from people and you don't always answer. And I have a filter. I tend to answer the fifth time they email me, because that means that they really, really want me to be in touch with them.
Right. Yeah.
But in this case, I did it straight away. Chris Lewis. I said, Chris, can we go for a coffee tomorrow? And then I presented my project to him, what I would like to do with the club. I didn't even know which division we were in. And I went in with a lot of enthusiasm. And what has allowed me to do, and this is perhaps the, in fact, after this, I'm doing a board meeting by Zoom. So it is the thing that takes the most amount of time of my life. But I do it so happily because I've got a vision, an idea of what I want to do, and I've implemented it for many years. We used to have two teams. Now we've got nine and we cannot have any more, but we've got two senior women, two senior men. We've got an academy. We've got about 250 people involved, and there used to be like five volunteers when I first came in. We all go in the same direction, and that's the challenge that everybody gets excited about helping, but with that, the idea that this is a club that shares values and it's not all about winning or becoming a Premier League club or a Premier League player. It's about representing the club well and giving a good example to kids and enjoying yourself, of course, and winning if you can more often than losing. So all that is in place already. Every year fighting to get sponsors to help us. Every year looking for a new step because I cannot stand still. And if I can, nobody around me can. It's the best thing I do. It's the best thing I do when you see the under eights or the under nines playing in the way that we would like the first team to play. When we build from the back, when we have possession most of the time, when we want to be protagonists, that's one way of enjoying yourself. Because I'm thinking, yeah, that's what I like my teams to play and our teams play that way. But when you see everybody representing you well, and there's such a huge amount of good people, they're all good people at the club. It's an energy that comes to you. I get much more, but much more than I give the club. And I will continue to do so, of course.
All right, Guillaume, well, I don't want to take up too much more of your time, but I did want to ask you one more question about Grant Wall, who I know that you worked closely with, especially at the World Cup in Qatar, where he tragically passed away. Can you tell me about your relationship with Grant? I mean, you were two of the prominent soccer reporters in the world, Grant particularly here in the United States. I just wonder if you could tell me about your relationship with him and what he meant to your World Cup and really about really your profession, if you will.
Yeah, I miss Grant. He was originally a friend of a friend. It was Gab Marcotti that introduces another genius of writing and understanding the game. Put us in touch. We shared a house in Joburg for the South African World Cup. And since then we got in touch. When he will be in Spain or in Barcelona, we will meet. We will cross paths in every tournament. And for Qatar, we decided to actually share a house together with Raphael Honigstein and James Horncastle. Gab Marcotti was going to be there, but ESPN had him somewhere else. So I said to Grant, do you want to join us? And he said, yes. And it was great from the beginning because he worked so hard. He worked so hard. He was always in front of the computer and preparing things, discussing things, meeting people. We had a pool, a communal pool in the compound where we were in. And every time he was in, he would be talking to whoever was there. And that sense of curiosity about the world is something that he always had very present. We headed to the stadium together when it all happened. And then there's a lot of confusion in your head because these things are not supposed to happen for somebody like him, young, so prominent, so good at what he did, such a good person. But it did. And in terms of what happened after, we share a WhatsApp group with some of the people that you know, with Gab, with some of the people that Grant worked with. And I think for all of us, it's been a very, very tough start of the year. I also lost Simon Hanley, who was a TV presenter for La Liga TV, 60-year-old, in December. So in a period of 2 weeks, two prominent people in my life kind of left. And yeah, I think, you know, all these things that I'm telling you about traveling and the energy that you need for it and the focus that you need to get the best out of what you do wasn't there. Wasn't there for physical reasons, started getting bronchitis and colds, but it was in the mind as well. I just didn't have the energy or the strength to do all I had to do. In fact, I canceled a book that I had to deliver by now. I'll do it next year. And it was all mixed. All that, you know, it makes you think. I've taken decisions. I've abandoned. Had this plan to conquer Spanish media, even though my career is quite clear already in place. I thought I like my mother to hear me more, you know, on Spanish radio, Spanish television. So I kind of 2 or 3 years ago started being in touch with them, doing things for them. Was taking a lot of my time and energy, not. Don't like how the Spanish media is run at the moment, abandon all that. And I'm thinking, you know what, let's make sure that we balance life a bit better, which I'm trying to do. And that's one of the many, if you like, lessons of having lived close to Grant. Not my closest friend, but somebody that we admire each other and looked after each other big time. And then the things you hear about what he had been doing for years, you know, looking after those guys that do the first podcast or they start a web page, and he always been there, and how well respected by both by the industry, is another sign of the magnitude of what he produced.
All right. Well, he was certainly an icon here in the United States. I know that he was working on documentaries as well. But Guillaume, I think that's a good place to leave it. And I'll plug the documentary one more time that we're all looking forward to very much here, Destination European Nights, which comes out June 6th, just before the Champions League final this year. Guillaume, is there anything else you might want to share before we go?
No, you just told me something I didn't know. So it's the 6th of June, is it? Okay.
I believe so.
Keep an eye on it. Thank you,
Guillaume. Thank you for joining us. And we look, like I said, we really look forward to the documentary.